We're back. The Nordic Leaders Podcast comes roaring back and goes global for season 5 with the theme of fail smart, lessons in leadership and life.
We still have conversations that matter with extraordinary people based in the Nordics.
And we speak to experts and thought leaders globally from Abu Dhabi to Zimbabwe.
In our most popular pods, our guests have been opening up about themselves, what they've learned along the way, and with the courage to talk about setbacks.
Indeed, there's stuff that didn't quite work out how they intended, but how they came back stronger and wiser.
So we've got all the best elements of the Nordic Leaders Podcast still there, but there's a few extra questions about the ups and downs of life.
So join us, David, Nick and Stefano, as we explore failing smart with our hyper-successful guests.
We'd really love to hear your thoughts, and you can connect with any of us on LinkedIn. And hey, 5-star ratings are okay if you like what you hear.
Good idea, David. 5-star ratings. So let's get started with Fail Smart. Today, we are delighted to welcome Johanna Smortals to the podcast, supply chain management expert and co-founder of Relix Solutions. Together with two fellow researchers, Mikko and Michael, Johanna co-founded Relix in 2005. From humble beginnings, it's now the world's coolest provider of retail planning solutions. Johanna has won numerous awards for her innovative entrepreneurial work. And as a regular and engaging speaker at various industry events, she's published a number of research papers in academic journals, such as the Journal of Operations Management. Today, Relix is a hyper-growth company employing over 1,300 people globally. Earlier this year, Relix raised 500 million euros in a Blackstone-led funding round, which consequently valued the company at a mere 5 billion euros. Not bad. Johanna, I just want to check in with you. Is that you?
Well, I can recognize certain things that you said. It was all factually correct. Perhaps not the full picture of myself.
No, indeed. And we're going to fill in some blanks in the next 20 to 30 minutes or so. So, as a way of starting our conversation, what is the biggest learning moment that has shaped who you are today?
Definitely not one learning moment. So I like to think that I learn something every day. And I actually, it's a bit of a cliche, but I think it's true that you can pick up things from the weirdest places, and of course engaging with a lot of super intelligent colleagues as I do makes it pretty easy. So there's lots of stuff to learn still, even in my kind of domain of speciality knowledge, like supply chain and retail optimization. There's still new things to learn and try, but then of course working with humans, that's the kind of enigma for everyone. You can never know other people fully, and perhaps not even yourself completely. So I think there's new things to learn in that area as well.
Indeed, indeed. Working with humans. What can you tell us about working with humans?
The human element is always the one that is most difficult to control. So for example, there's surprises in supply chains as well, but they tend to fall into recognizable buckets. You have transportations that are late, or you have production failures, things like that. But the human mind is very kind of vast, and there's some unique combinations that you can never say that you've seen them all. So I think just working with different people's different personalities coming with different cultural background, different areas of expertise, exposes you to quite a number of surprises on any given day. So I think that's actually one thing I enjoy quite a bit working in this kind of international setting. It's like being a cultural anthropologist, that you can detect these nice weird things about humans. And of course, the most weird thing is the Finnish engineer, as we all know. So that's kind of my reference point. And we have a number of those in our company, but it's also become quite clear that my point of reference is kind of off because we are a clear minority in the world. So judging everyone based on how would a Finnish engineer do this is kind of wrong by default.
Yeah. And are Finnish engineers, are they the best in the world, would you say?
Best in what? I guess you need to pick the category first. I'm sure Finnish engineers are best at something. Then it's another question if that's kind of a relevant category or not.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. I can see Stefano laughing there as well as another fellow engineer. And Johanna, you describe yourself as an introvert engineer who gets stuff done on time.
Yeah.
And I just wondered, so what does that mean for your colleagues and your customers who work with you directly? What does that mean in terms of what they get from you?
Yeah, what our customers get, and I hope that actually applies to our company as a whole. That's something that we've tried explicitly to accomplish, is to, well, deliver on time, obviously. That's a key thing, that we kind of deliver on our promises. So not just on time, but also what was agreed and something that delivers value. But also, as things sometimes don't go as planned for numerous reasons, sometimes problems on the client side, for example. I think it's also equally important to be very transparent on how things are going. So that's something I try to live up to, and also try to kind of have our company live up to, so that we are honest and transparent and proactive. We don't try to hide problems and hope that they will disappear magically by themselves, but rather, you know, tackle them upfront. And clients are quite okay with challenges. They know things don't always go as planned, but they hate negative surprises, as, you know, anyone does. So I think that's something I try to deliver as a person, but also try to get our company to live up to. And then I think the engineering mindset comes across as kind of continuous improvement. So I'm quite driven by progress. I seldom have a specific goal in mind. I'm not very competitive as a person. I don't kind of care about, you know, being the best or beating competition, but I'm really keen on seeing progress. So both personally and then from a kind of company perspective, you just need to keep improving things. And that's also what makes things interesting, because if you reach kind of an adequate level of something and stop there, it gets really boring. Then you just do the same thing over again. But if you strive to do better every time, you have something kind of to think about and mull over and try to figure out. And I really like solving problems.
One of the things that we hear a lot from our guests is the idea of work today is never done. You know, there's always like the next thing and the next thing. And people struggle sometimes because they don't have a clear end time or end zone. And so this idea of seeing progress in every day, every week, every month, I would say is quite a superpower. How do you do continuous progress?
I think there's a couple of different elements to it. So I love data. I love measuring things. I love tracking. So if it's an area where you can actually track what's going on, and that's something I really like about, for example, supply chains, that there's some kind of clear metrics on what you're trying to achieve, and then you can look at them and see if you're moving in the right direction. And of course, those can be applied to many other things. So we, for example, in my own function within RELEX, marketing and communication, we do have some areas where you can track progress through metrics and data. So that's quite satisfying. But then there's the other side of the coin, is problems. So if you have a problem and you solve it, and if it's a relevant problem and you make it smaller, then that's progress as well. But I think it's part of the maybe a bit of a Finnish engineer mindset, that there's always a ton of problems. So you can never be kind of completely satisfied. So I think that's something that we could actually be a bit better at, is to kind of celebrate those small victories along the way and not be like, okay, done with that one, 99 more left.
Yeah, indeed. Stefano, I was interested as well. We've talked about the Finnish engineer. From an Italian engineer perspective, how do you see some of what Johanna has already talked about today?
Yeah, thank you, Nick. Yeah, well, it's very familiar. I've been working here for so long in Finland that I know that behavior and way of thinking and mindset very well. Of course, we Italian in general, whether they're engineers or not, they think in a bit of a different way. And I think that's the beautiful thing of like kind of having different cultures meeting each other. Johanna mentioned before the human element and surprises as well, whether they're negative or positive. So I think when different cultures meet, that's when you have really the human element coming to the forefront and creating something new and innovative. So whether they're Italian or Finnish engineers, it doesn't matter. I think the collaboration between the different cultures is, and different, not just cultures, but different walks of life of different people, it's what makes work worth living, essentially.
And David, to give Johanna a bit more of a break at this point, what have you heard so far?
I was curious to ask Johanna about learning. You said that you pick up things from the weirdest places in supply chain and retail optimization. So what's the weirdest place that you've picked up some learning from?
Yeah, perhaps not weird, but a bit different. I read a lot, and I actually think that reading literature that's kind of novels and stories, things like that, can be quite helpful in navigating, especially like human thinking, because that's a real avenue of kind of peeking into someone else's brain. Because you probably, David, noticed that when you read a book and if it's well written, you kind of empathize with the main character, even if that person would be doing something bad, for example. And that kind of actively engages you in a different way of thinking than you used to. So that's why I much prefer books over movies, where you can kind of keep that arm's length distance to what you're seeing. Whereas in books, you kind of get more involved. And I think that's been quite helpful in kind of cultivating an openness to different perspectives, that you can actually empathize with someone that on the superficial level would be completely different from you.
That's very Shakespearean, to empathize with characters that are flawed. So they do good and bad things, but we can empathize with them even as they're getting off track. The other thing that I was curious about, Johanna, was that you said that you're not competitive. Does that surprise people in your teams, that you don't have that competitive drive, or have we just really shifted into a more collaborative leadership age? What do you think?
That is very hard for me to comment on, because I've kind of done my entire career in RELX, or well, apart from some years doing research, which is a fairly unique working environment, I would assume. But I think some people at least think that for someone to be successful in business, and especially in kind of building a company, you would need to be super competitive. And I've always hated competing. I feel that's kind of irrelevant if I'm better or worse than someone else at something specific. But that said, I'm also very ambitious. So I think you can be super ambitious, wanting to do something really well without necessarily having to compete with anyone. And I think that's pretty built in. I've always had, even, you know, in when I started school in the first grade, I just wanted to do well just for the sake of it.
So it's an internal motivation.
Very much so, very much so. And then, of course, that spills over to the team, because I think if you would speak with my colleagues, they would all say the same thing, that I have fairly high expectations, especially on the quality that we as a team are supposed to deliver. Then I think I'm fairly, you know, understanding boss in most cases. So if there are some issues that make it difficult to reach that level of quality, I'm not the person that says, well, we just have to do it, find a way. I'm rather focused then on removing those obstacles. And but I still want to do a really good job, just need to find a way to do it.
How would you characterize the expectations to you? So you said that, you know, the team knows your expectations. How do you see the team's expectations towards you?
I have a very international team with very varying degrees of seniority and backgrounds. So I'd say there's a pretty wide range of expectations. So I can't distill it to one thing, because people really need different things. If you are kind of a senior expert, I think what they are looking for is potentially some guidance on, for example, is this more important than that? So, you know, kind of a nudge in the right direction. And they typically ask for it when they need it. And then, for example, a more junior person might be looking for validation, for example. You are doing a good job. I see you making a great effort. I see your progress, those sort of things. So I guess everyone needs a bit of everything, but the kind of emphasis is quite different depending on whom exactly in my team you would be talking about.
So does it help to be the introvert, extrovert then, that you can kind of see different sides of different people?
I think at least I'm probably better equipped to understand introverts. But then maybe I miss some things when it comes to the extroverts, because it's just easier to relate to people that have the similar behavioral patterns that you do yourself. So it's, you should never fall into that trap of assuming that you kind of understand things. Yeah, it's better to be explicit and ask. That's one lesson I've learned.
That's a really good lesson. And actually, it's okay, because the extroverts will tell you their needs.
Right? Yeah, but sometimes I've noticed that extroverts are also kind of good at hiding things, for example, insecurities. So in an introvert, it might be easier to kind of sense the situation from that perspective, because you're kind of on the same wavelength. But then an insecure extrovert can be hard for me to read.
Fascinating. Nick, I don't think that I gave Johanna much of a break there.
No, that was a tough break. Are you introvert, extrovert?
I'm an introvert. I'm an introvert that needs to extrovert himself regularly for his work. So I've just sort of figured out how to do that.
Well, maybe we should give Johanna another break and ask her another question then, because I've noticed that Johanna is very good at public speaking. She's regularly invited to events where she's got a big audience and she has to bring her message to life. So I just wondered, Johanna, how do you do that if you describe yourself as an introvert?
Yeah, I think there's actually two topics in this question. The first one is, what is an introvert? So from my perspective, being an introvert doesn't mean that I wouldn't enjoy meeting people. It just means that I need a lot of my time. I need to spend time alone. And if I'm out and about a lot, I need more kind of personal downtime just in my own head. So it doesn't mean that I would be kind of super socially awkward, for example. I think I can manage a dinner table discussion as good as anyone, but it's just kind of the balance needs to be right. So I need that kind of personal space as well. But then public speaking, definitely not a favorite thing for me. I used to be very, very shy. So in my university days, I don't think I spoke with anyone except my kind of closest circle of people. And I think that changed when I found kind of my expert identity, when I felt that I have kind of subject area where I really know things and I really do have something to say, and what I'm saying adds a lot of value to for the audience. So I think that was a big change for me, finding like an area where what I'm saying actually adds to the knowledge of the world. And I think that's a trait some Finns share, that we don't like to speak just to kind of fill the void. We need to have something to say. And for me, that something to say was, you know, supply chain expertise that was growing. So that made things easier. So still today, I'm a lot more comfortable speaking about like hard topics like supply chains and retail processes, where I feel that I'm super comfortable. I know this stuff. Hmm. And then the more personal it gets, like here.
Yeah, right now.
The more difficult it gets.
Thank you so much for being up for these questions. It's really lovely to hear, though, because I think we all feel like this. I know David mentioned that he feels more of an introvert. I'm probably right in the middle, ambivert. You know, I really, as you described it, Johanna, I really need to have my own space before an event and after. One of my worst nightmares happened last week. I had a two-day event in Helsinki with a big group. And at the end of day one, they did something terrible. They invited me for dinner. And I'd just been training them all day. And, oh, that's a lovely offer. And I went. I attended the dinner. But really, honestly, what I wanted to do was disappear and be on my own.
Yeah, that's actually one learning I've got from one of my colleagues, who is, I think, even more of an introvert than I am. So if he spends a day, for example, workshopping with other people, so pretty kind of intense engagement, then he blocks off the next day in his calendar so that there aren't any kind of additional meetings on top of that thing, because it's kind of strained him. So again, it doesn't mean he doesn't enjoy the workshops. It just means that you need to do something different next to kind of rebalance and recharge yourself.
Absolutely. David, how do you deal with that? You've put your introvert tag on the table already.
Well, I enjoy those dinner events after the workshops.
You've got lots of good stories, though.
Yeah, I've had three this week. I enjoy them because it's a clear context where my role is clear and there are easy kind of ready things to talk about, and it belonged to the workshop leadership development I was doing this week. So I prepare myself mentally for it and they're very enjoyable. I don't need to do it again next week, but
yeah, no, that's great. And you sounds like you have a methodology there for planning and getting yourself ready for those moments. Stefano, how do Italians do it?
I don't know. I'm not a typical Italian by any means. So, well, I would say that in general, you would find more extroverts than introverts in Italy, or at least apparent extroverts, just because the social context is requiring it. I am personally more of an extrovert than an introvert, but I enjoy being alone as well. Can get energy from being alone. I learned how to do that. And I enjoy being with people, working with people, but I also like to enjoy my me time when I have some, which happens often on the bicycle. That's my me time. So I think what Johanna said is very relevant. It's not that introverts are socially awkward, it's that they get energy from different things than extroverts do. And learning how to get the energy, whether you are introvert or an extrovert, learning to get the energy from either your me time or your together time is a skill that it can be learned.
Mm. Mm.
Maybe it's also a cultural thing, Nick, because here's my factoid for the pod today, that Brits spend just over an hour per day eating. Italians spend over 2 hours per day eating.
And we eat the same things, so we just are slower.
Interesting.
It takes more time to eat if you speak at the same time.
Exactly. I mean, but that's actually the thing. I mean, for us, and even for my family, I mean, our family is fully Italian, and you know, it's unthinkable not to have dinner together. It's a moment when we close the day and socialize and talk about things, while in other cultures it's completely okay and normal. So being at the table is not just for eating, it's really for socializing. That's what I was referring to when I was talking about the social context that pushes, you know, the culture to be a bit more extrovert than introvert.
It also shows up in the working day rhythm. So with these young leaders that I was working with this week, the French participants said lunch break is sacred, we always have our lunch break. And the Finnish host of the program said, well, in Finland we feed ourselves while we're working, basically.
A subtle huge difference there. Yeah, it's really interesting. The cross-cultural question is a big one. And so we were talking about energy, getting ready for a training or a workshop or a speech. Johanna, energy management, I sense, is a big thing for you. And I know that, you know, like one thing, for example, that you've done in the past few years during the pandemic is taking regular walks and meetings at the same time. What can you tell us about how you manage your energy and focus?
Yeah, I think that's been a big win of this kind of pandemic period. Pretty immediately when we started working from home. Before that, I was quite a bit at the office when I needed to concentrate on for example, writing stuff and so on. I did work from home, so I've always been working some part of the weeks from home. But then when we switched to fully remote, and there was a massive amount of Teams meetings for everything, I quite quickly picked up the habit of taking those meetings outside while walking. So that kind of gives me two things. One is that I want to do physical things. I need to do some exercise just to kind of, keep both body and mind in shape. And then when the gyms were closed and so on, and I really dislike doing workouts at home. There's just, it's really difficult to get in the mood, so to speak. So instead of trying to force myself to you know, move about in the flat, I thought that, well, at least walking, you know, some exercise. And then I found out that it had some additional advantages. One is that I do focus so much better when walking at the same time and not having the temptation of a laptop in front of me while I should be actually listening in, focusing on the concentration, having, you know, all those email notifications and chat notifications and, you know, whatever right in front of your face. That's not a good way to do it for me. So when I'm out in the woods, only, you know, relying on my phone, there's so much less temptation to do other things at the same time. So I think that's been great. It's really kind of made my days a lot better.
That's great. And do you feel yourself being more effective then during those conversations where you're out walking?
Absolutely. So I take in things a lot better when walking at the same time. I'm a lot more present. And I think there's some research on this that it does help your thinking processes as well to move at the same time. And I don't have any, you know, facts, data, metrics to prove this.
Oh, but no. My own feeling, I'm surprised. Is
that I'm thinking better when walking at the same time.
And before we hit record today, you called yourself something. You said, well, I don't know if you want to say it, related to walking around an island near Helsinki.
Yeah. So I live in Lauttasaari, which is a kind of tiny island just outside of the city center. So it really doesn't have that much, you know, ground. So I walk in circles, basically. So I'm probably kind of known in the neighborhood as the crazy lady of Lauttasaari, walking in circles and talking to herself. So life goal accomplished.
There you go. Brilliant. What a nickname to give yourself. So yeah, if anyone's listening to this from Lauttasaari, look out for Johanna doing laps of the island. Stefano, David, how have you managed focus and energy, thinking about what Johanna's just said about the walking?
Well, one thing about the walking that made me think of is that during the middle of the pandemic, I live in the woods here, you can see behind me, and I took my dog out for a walk one time, and I had a meeting, and I thought I'd be fine to take it out there in the woods, it'd be nice and quiet, but there were so many other people wandering around the woods having Teams meetings at the same time, and we're all trying to avoid each other. Finnish forests were full of people on Zoom. And
I've seen the same thing, especially when the pandemic kind of started, because it was, you know, springtime and so on. So less people in the winter, I have to say. But then, of course, you have depending on the season, you have the lawnmowers, the leaf blowers, and then, of course, all year round, you have the garbage trucks. So there's always a bit of background noise. At some point, a colleague mentioned to me, "Johanna, it's hard to hear you because the birds are chirping too loud." That's a nice problem to have.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I'm familiar with that problem. But to answer your question, Nick, frequent breaks and making sure that if I don't have back-to-back meetings. If I do, then they're 45 minutes meetings, so that, you know, there is a chance to reset, process what's happened, and just having breaks regularly. How about you, Stefano? How do you keep your energies up in the work time?
Yeah, on top of doing what you just said, David, I try to, and of course what Johanna and Nick have said about, you know, taking walking meetings, I need to engineer in my schedule some focus, and which I try to protect as much as I can. Like on Fridays, for instance, today I do have basically all focus time, so that I have time to process what's happened in the week, you know, recalibrate my direction, and then move on to the next week. That gives me energy. And then As I said, I get energy from work. I get energy from people as well. What kind of sucks my energy is staying too much long time in the same meeting, listening. And Johanna mentioned notifications, which I think is the worst thing that we have invented. I have all my notifications shut down, both on the phone and on the laptop. If I want to check if I got a message, I go to the app or to the Slack, and I check if I have a message, not the other way around. So that's also important to me, like these kind of distractions and losing focus constantly sucks my energy quite easily. So I just shut down all the notifications, both on the phone and on the laptop as well.
Yeah, I've done a bit of a compromise there. I have shut down all notifications on my phone, and it's also silent all the time. So the worst way to reach me is trying to call me, because I never see those calls. But then on the laptop, I do have notifications. But I'm pretty good at ignoring them when I have something tangible that I'm doing. But the trap is when I'm listening to someone, then I always kind of think that I can just, you know, take a quick look at this thing. It's not going to, you know, impact anything. And it does. It always does. So I think the next level would be to kind of shut off notifications when on calls on the laptop.
Well, it's totally possible, I think. So if really there is an emergency which comes from the family, then I have them bypassing the notifications. So I set up just notification bypass, and then everything comes through from my family. But that's it. I mean, there is nobody else that can access me unless I want to. And that helps me focusing on the right things and getting the energy from the work I do. Because what you mentioned, Johanna, kind of being in the zone, like having the focus, is also giving energy to me. And I think to everybody.
Yeah, and one thing I've done to kind of reduce the temptation of those notifications is that I block out blocks of time from my calendar for emails. And that's kind of a broad category of all things ad hoc. So I typically have one morning block and one afternoon block for you know, just going through all those messages, because that helps me also park them for a while. So even if it's kind of semi-urgent, I can ignore it for a while because I know I have set some time aside soon when I'm going to deal with it properly and not do a kind of half-assed job as at answering it on my phone with 15 different typos and not actually, you know, answering all the questions.
And I think also the perception of urgency has increased quite a lot in recent times. Like, not a lot of stuff is really urgent if you think about it, but then we perceive that we need to attend to whatever happens on our screens right away. And if you really step back for a moment and think, really, is this urgent? Do I really have to answer to that thing now? And usually the answer is no. So
I agree.
That is a cultural thing.
I also think I have a pretty strong intuition on the kind of, in project management, you speak about the critical path. So the tasks that are kind of impacting the full timeline and kind of blocking other things from happening, for example, if they're late. So I kind of intuitively apply that to my own work and have a sense of it for how it's going to impact others' work. So I'm pretty careful about not being that bottleneck for other people's work. But then other than that, I'm pretty insensitive to kind of fake emergencies or urgencies. But yeah, I actually thought about the critical path of my morning just this morning. So like a big short planning session that, yes, I need to get the coffee started now because, you know, that's the longest process. So I need to do that now. Next, I'm going to turn on the washing machine and then I'm going to make the bed and then I'm going to start preparing breakfast. And when this beautifully comes together, I'll have my coffee ready when my kind of morning sandwich is done. So project planning intuitively in the now.
Perfect.
And I think, again, I mean, the thing that you did, that you thought about it and in advance. And I think thinking is a bit, how to say, underrated nowadays. So we just tend to get into the mood of doing things without thinking very much about what is the most important thing that can give us leverage to achieve what we want to achieve.
Mm.
So thinking is the key here, what you mentioned, Johan.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with that, Stefano. And I'm thinking right now, Johanna, what did you have for breakfast today? What was in that sandwich?
Yeah, I alternate between two different things. So that's how boring I am. So it's either rye bread or then it's yogurt with berries. Today it was rye bread.
Excellent. So it's berries tomorrow. Is that right?
No, there's no pattern to this.
Oh, there's a pattern.
Okay. It depends on stock availability.
Of course.
And
yeah,
the expected shelf life of product and that sort of thing.
Beautiful. I knew we'd talk about that at some point. Johanna, we have one final question for you. But before we pose that question, did you have any questions for us?
Well, one thing that we kind of touched on very lightly with the kind of morning project planning is life hacks. So I think I developed quite a number of tiny life hacks that just makes my days easier. So what are your best kind of small day-to-day life hacks that have kind of improved your quality of life?
Great question. Thank you for asking. David and Stefano are expert on these. Go for it. Just fire them out.
Okay. Well, I've got one, which is that if there's something that I really feel I need to do or that's on my mind, I put it onto a post-it note and stick it on my desk so it's parked at the last thing at night before I go to bed, so it's there and I've got rid of it. It's on the post-it note, so it doesn't need to be churning around my brain box.
Thanks, David. Good one. Stefano.
I don't know if I do have one or many life hacks.
Sounds like you've got many, I would say.
Yeah, I think you know what I said already, you know, blocking out time to reflect on the week past and think about the next week is something which has helped me enormously to discard things which I didn't need to do or were not important and really put on my agenda the things which are important. So I go back to, you know, my life hack is thinking. Mm. So that's really my only life hack.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
But Johanna, do you want to offer one of those life hacks to us? What's your favorite?
I actually have a similar one as you have, David. So I use the post-its as well. But then, you know, sometimes you get that one thought just because when you're going to bed. And it's really hard to let it go because obviously it was brilliant or super important or urgent or whatnot. So I do send emails to myself at that point.
Yeah, yes.
So that they are top of the inbox next morning and I don't have to, you know, spend energy trying to hang on to that idea when I should be sleeping. So I think that's helpful. But then I have a lot of tiny tips and tricks that are just developed to make day-to-day life easier. So for example, the kind of Kanban toolbox system for making sure that I never run out of coffee, for example. So there has to be that, you know, second one coming in so that you don't run out. The same applies to toilet paper and other things. I've also done a lot of what we call in retail assortment rationalization. So I basically eat the same things with very little variation, but that makes like online ordering or grocery shopping so much easier. It's just the same thing. Clickety, clickety, clickety. If I like this cheese today, why not eat it tomorrow as well?
Yeah, it sounds like you know something about supply chains.
Yeah, I do know a thing or two.
And how about you, Nick? Have you got a life hack that you want to send out to the podosphere?
Nothing groundbreaking. I've just been taking notes, listening to you three. Thank you for those. I always get my gym kit or my running kit out the night before and lay it out. Try and win the morning. Try and wake up before the kids and do a little bit of exercise, bit of thinking. Just sets me up nicely. And as a slight introvert, one thing that really helps me is to make a decision early in the day to give somebody a call as opposed to just a lazy email. And that somehow sets in motion some positive energy, actually speaking to someone about something that I could have emailed them on, but just to talk to somebody somehow gives me some energy and momentum. So, final question, Johanna, as we come to the end of our conversation today, and it's linked a little bit to what we were just talking about, but I'm going to ask you this anyway. What is the number one lesson that you've learned for leading a successful life?
I think the number one thing there is that you need to define success yourself. And I think that's something that I've been fairly good at. I haven't felt a lot of peer pressure since, you know, high school. But still, I probably spend a bit more time than many others on thinking when I get an impulse to do something. I quite often step back and think, is this something I really want to do? Or is this something I think others are expecting me to do or expecting me to want to do? So these impulses come, you know, large and small. It can be, for example, being asked to participate in a, you know, fancy event. And then I step back and think, do I really want to do this? Because an impulse could be that this is high status, this is worthwhile doing. But then when I take a step back, I'd be like, no, I really don't want to do this. And then the next thing is, well, is it going to be beneficial to, for example, the company or whatnot? And then when I conclude it's going to be beneficial or it's not going to be beneficial, then I'm going to make like really considered decision based on what I actually want to do and what I actually want to achieve. And then you have these small things, like sometimes I get the impulse that, yes, I really should invest a bit in, you know, decorating my home. It's very minimalist, I can tell. And then the next thing I do is, and how exactly is that going to make me happier? And then I'm like, yeah, no, actually, well, in a sense, it would be nice to have a beautiful home, but it's actually not nice enough to spend time on it. And then I just drop it. And now my flat still looks the same as it did, you know, 5 years ago when I moved in.
Well, we like the kitchen. I mean, we've already given you feedback on the kitchen. It looks great.
Yeah, I changed nothing in it. It was perfect from the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this just frees up a lot of capacity that I can then spend on things that I actually really want to do. For example, going to a gym class or something.
Yeah. That is a wonderful answer. Johanna, thank you for a wonderful conversation today. How was it for you?
It was okay. I'm not going to lie and say it was great, but it was perfectly okay. It was as good as can be.
We'll take that.
Yeah, but a finish perfectly okay is really, really good in English, I think.
Oh, so, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
No, we'll take that.
It would be awesome if I came from the US.
Indeed. So, brilliant.
Thank you, Johanna.
Thank you.
For awesome conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Johanna.
Hey listener, it's Stefano here. Since you got until here, we think that you might like the podcast. It would mean so much if you could leave us a 5-star review and share this with as many of your friends as possible. This will help us be discovered and spread the news. Can you just take 5 minutes and do that for us? Thank you.